All right, this is the Believe in Buckeye podcast, and we have a special guest today.
A very special guest. All right. Very special. Our first guest.
Our first guest.
A very special guest. A Buckeye. As well. Right. So we have Albert Breer here, who's currently with, got a lot of jobs, currently with Sports Illustrated, Fox News, NBC, formerly worked with
NFL Network.
NFL Network, Boston Globe, Dallas. So he's seasoned. It feels like a seasoned reporter. And he's currently running the Monday Morning Quarterback Club. Mm-hmm. And I believe you do that for Sports Illustrated. Okay.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, okay. So we're excited. We're excited. Yeah. We're excited to have you. Thanks for taking your time and meeting with us. Like I say, you're first guest on our short-lived show. It's like history.
That's a great honor. It's a great honor.
You are a Buckeye.
Yep.
You went to Ohio State. And if you would just be comfortable telling us a little bit about what brought you to Ohio State, being a guy who grew up in the Massachusetts area, right?
Right.
Yeah, sure. I grew up outside of Boston. My dad is from Detroit. Most of my family went to Michigan or Michigan State. And so, like, I always thought, like, and, you know, if you grow up here, like, outside of Boston, like, a lot of people go to smaller colleges. That wasn't, like, I didn't think that was college. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you went to a school with, like, 5,000 people, that's, like, overgrown high school. You know what I mean? Like, so.
No offense to all you small college people.
Yeah. I always wanted, like, the big football school, you know? And, so, like, I had, you know, a lot of experience with my family having gone to, like, you know, Big Ten schools with Michigan and Michigan State. And, you know, like, I had a guy I played high school football with who's a year older than me. He was a priority walk-on at Ohio State during the John Cooper years, named Eddie Brown. Still lives in Columbus, actually, and still a really good friend of mine. And, you know, he had sort of told me, like, you know, you're looking at Michigan and Michigan State, you gotta look at Ohio State too. And I went out there during a football recruiting weekend, which was kind of wild. I'm not sure if the other people knew I was a recruit or not. but yeah, I mean, it didn't take much to sell me. And yeah, that's how I ended up there. And obviously, you guys can tell by looking at my tweets, I had a pretty good time when I was there too. I definitely
It's not hard to sell Ohio State, especially
as a young
kid looking for a place to spend the next 4 or 5 years. I'm interested in you getting into doing what you do now.
Yeah.
You know, what got you to this point? Was it at Ohio State, or was it something that you always wanted to do?
I mean, honestly, like, it's actually sort of interesting. Like, my dad, you know, when I was a kid, I loved all sports. And, you know, like, football was the sport I loved the most. And, you know, my dad had a huge influence on me getting into football. I didn't have anybody, like, in my family that had been in journalism, though. And my grades weren't great my first couple of years in high school, to say the least. And so he thought, like, I had to, you know, hey, you ought to get some more things in your college application, or you're going to have a problem here, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he sort of looked at it and said, you're passionate about sports. Why don't we find something that you can do that involves sports, you know? And so, you know, he called the newspaper in town, which was just the one community weekly newspaper, and talked to the sports editor there. The sports editor called me, said, hey, would you want to, you know, just write off of the football games you're playing in? So I wrote off the football games I played in as a junior in high school. And I guess they did a good enough job where they brought me back and said, hey, would you want to do this for – like a team you're not playing for. So I covered the girls basketball team for that paper that winter. And, you know, like, as a high school kid, it was like, I was getting like $50 a story, which, like, I, you know, at that point, like, I think, like, this is easy. Like, I'm going to keep doing this. And, you know, you just slowly get better at it. And, you know, I'll tell you, like, the main thing about it, like, for me was, like, it didn't really feel like work. You know what I mean? Like, I like doing it. And I was never like a very good writer, but I just could write about football. You know what I mean? Like, I guess it just sort of came through that this is something I was passionate about and something I could do. And so then, you know, I sort of looked at, you know, how would I get involved in sports after high school? And this was sort of an avenue to do it, you know? And so, you know, I get to Ohio State and I start writing for the Lantern when I'm there, because I'm a journalism major, and that sort of opens some avenues, like, for some television internships, and sort of one thing led to another. I'd say, like, I really wanted to be involved in football. Like I knew that from, I mean, I don't think I'd be doing this like covering any other sport. Like, I don't think I would have had the drive to do it covering any other sport. I just, I love football. And, you know, like, so I, it's just one thing led to another, led to another. And I knew I wanted to be involved in that specific sport. And this was just something I found that I guess I was relatively good at, you know?
Yeah. So I find it interesting that, like you say, your first couple of stories was reporting on, were basically reporting for the team that you're playing for.
Right.
How biased was those first couple stories? I'm sure, like, hey, we did everything right, and it was the referees.
It was definitely weird, but I, you know what? Like, honestly, like, I liked doing it. You know what I mean? Like, and it was like, I would talk to my teammates about what would go in there. And, you know, I think there's like some valuable lessons you gain. I mean, I think the stuff that you do that you realize carries over in anything is like relationship building, you know? And like, when I was doing that, like, I had to manage my own relationships on the team. You know what I mean? Like, what I was writing a lot of times was stuff that would get clipped and would like get put in the paper, right? Like, and the, you know, like somebody's parents would like have that up like on the bulletin board or whatever, like, hey, my kid's name's in the paper. You know, like it really, like, I think doing it at that age, because, you know, and even when I was covering like the, you know, girls basketball team that winter, like I was friends with all those girls, you know what I mean? Like, so it sort of taught you like relationship building and accountability and all that different stuff. You know what I mean? Like, and so, it was a little weird at first, but I do think there were some like interesting lessons, like actually doing it first that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now you went to Ohio State. Did you go here during the Cooper?
Yeah. Years? So we were actually like relatively mediocre when I was there. Like my freshman year was the year Andy Katzenmoyer was in the cover of Sports Illustrated. They wrote the story about how he was taking basket weaving or whatever. But we were number one in the country, and we lost that year to Michigan State. Saban was the coach at Michigan State. There's a block punt. They came back from way behind, and that Ohio State team was great, but blew everybody else out, but like lost that one game and cost us the national title. I think Tennessee won the national title that year. And then after that, it was 6-6 my sophomore year. Then I think 8-4 my junior year, and Cooper got fired and Tress came in the middle of my junior year. So my senior year would have been Tressel's first full year, or his first year as head coach. They beat Michigan at the end of that year, and then they won the national title right after I left.
Okay.
So I caught like the most mediocre period.
Yeah, like, you know, we think about the 90s teams. For me growing up, I was obviously younger at the time, a kid. But you just think of the 90s teams, a lot of talent, but just like kind of always underperformed. But this had
my freshman year, like the corners were, they had three first round picks at corner. It was Antoine Winfield, Nate Clements, and Ahmad Plummer were the three corners. They had a safety named Damon Moore, who was a starter right away, who hurt his neck in the pros, was a starter right away in the pros. And then Andy Katzenmoyer, Niall Diggs. It's like, I think, if I remember right, every starter off of that team my freshman year on defense, every starter on defense played in the NFL, which is insane, you know?
That's crazy.
So give us some advice, because we're not used to, at least me personally, I didn't grow up as a Buckeye fan. I'm not used to losing to the team up north, right? So I haven't experienced, two
it
in
sucks.
A row. How do we navigate this time?
How do we get better, right?
As a fan.
Well, I mean, I think like blocking some people's phone numbers can help. I have enough Michigan people in my life, family and otherwise, that I had to hear a lot of it over the last couple of weeks. I don't know, man. Like, it was weird because it almost did feel like one of those 90s games, you know, like where I felt like we could have been up by 20 in the first half if a couple of things go differently, you know, if you make the tackle on Johnson there on the sideline and you have a little help over the top. There for, I think it was Cam Martinez, right? Like, and then you convert some of your opportunities, you know, Cade Stover catches the ball like that. There are little things, and it felt like it was right there, and you just left the door open, You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and so I don't know if there's any great advice I have for dealing with it. Because I haven't dealt with it a lot either. I mean, I honestly, like when I was there, so we won my freshman year. We beat Michigan my freshman year.
Yeah.
Lost sophomore and junior year, but that was when like that was sort of like the low point. Like that was when Cooper was like on the ropes.
Mm. Yeah.
And then my senior year, crazy story. Like I don't know if you guys are probably too young to remember this, but like quarterback gets a DUI two nights before the Illinois game. And so our starting quarterback, Steve Belisari, was out for the Michigan game. And that's how Craig Krenzel became, like, that was his first big game, was against Michigan. They beat Michigan. And then I think we've lost two times from then until like just the last couple of years. Yeah. So
that's something I guess you could speak to. Is like, I guess you got to really see the culture change, right? From how things are being ran with the football team with Cooper and then Tressel coming in. I know obviously his memorable first speech is, you know, in front of the basketball team saying how we're going to beat Michigan. So how would you rate, I guess, the culture of the team kind of in that
transition? So Brian, you're from Ohio and Chimney, you're not, right?
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh.
Right. Okay. So I would say like one of the things that was interesting was I was actually doing radio with Brady Quinn, and he remembered this, which was interesting because it was around when he was in high school. Okay. I don't know if you guys remember the name Ryan Brewer, but he was a running back for South Carolina way back. This little like white running back who was Mr. Ohio, and Ohio State didn't offer him. And then 2 years in a row, I think it was in the Outback Bowl, like just this kid lit them up, right? And the whole criticism of Cooper was like he's gone too national and he's missing on too many kids who are right there in Ohio, and he's alienated the high school coaches in Ohio. And so, you know, really what it was like with Tressel was like, I want to restore pride in the program and I want to build a fence around the state. And we're not going to let any great player get out of here. And, you know, I can, in the 90s, if you really look back at it, like Ohio State would routinely lose like a really good Cleveland player to Michigan or a really good Cleveland or a really good Cincinnati player to Notre Dame. That would happen a lot. Yeah. And then Tressel comes in and that stops, you know, and like all of a sudden now there's a fence around the state. And I think it coincided with some of the other Big Ten programs sort of taking a downturn. And, you know, that was sort of like sort of restoring some of the tradition and pride in the program. And I think Coop, to his credit, like he did a lot of things that were needed. Like they needed to start recruiting nationally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they needed to go into Florida and to go into Texas and go into California. And like when I was there, some of the great players, David Boston was from Texas, you know, Diggs, I believe, was from California. We had a ton of kids from Florida on the team. Like even the championship team that the Tress won with, like Michael Jenkins, Chris Campbell, those guys are from Florida. So like it was sort of like Tressel did a good job, I think, of, at least from my view, it was he restored the pride in the state and the connections in the state that they needed to have and building a fence around the state, making sure that guys like you, Bryant, grew up wanting to go to school there and had them at the top of the list no matter what, while also like leveraging everything that Cooper had built and still bringing in the national kids, you know?
Yeah, that's
and
interesting that you like, say that because it's like a wave, right? It's like a wave because, like, you kind of seen that from Tressel to Meyer and Dave, now that they're getting more national with recruits. And then after we lose to Michigan, like, there's like a buzz on Twitter, like, Coach Day is not doing a good enough job in Ohio.
I'll tell you what, like, it's like a lot of the stuff you're hearing, like, now – is exactly what people were saying about Cooper 25 years ago. Exactly. It's he doesn't care enough about the state, that like all of that. Like, and I don't think it's necessarily fair to Ryan.
But it's
the same sort of thing that you would hear back then. And I can just remember like so much of it was because there were definitely like high school coaches in the state of Ohio that felt like they had been alienated or that their programs weren't getting enough attention from Ohio State back then, like in the 90s, when Ohio State was going outside the state to go and get like great players from elsewhere. And, you know, the truth is, I think like Coop took a lot of bullets that somebody at some point was going to have to take regardless. You know what I mean? That was going to have to happen at some point because there was no way it was just, like look at Alabama. Alabama doesn't just recruit in state. Like Georgia, as great as they are and as good as like Atlanta is at producing talent, like they've got a lot. Like those two big tight ends they have, I think one of them's from California and the other one's from Nevada. You know what I mean? Like, so everybody has to do this. Yeah. And I think Coop, like, you know, it was a time like Coop, like took some bullets that somebody at some point was going to have to take.
Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it. Let's just talk about the college football awards, and I don't know how much you've really.
You want to talk about how Marvin Harrison got screwed?
Yeah, that's really what I was going with. Top receiver in the nation, and I'm gonna be honest. I wear a lot of bias because I watch every Ohio State football game. I didn't watch every Tennessee game. I watched a few of them. I watched a lot of the big ones. But man, when you look at these receivers play, is Marvin Harrison not the best?
I don't know how I honestly, like, and yeah, I'm biased too, right? Like, I know what show I'm on here, but like, I honestly, like, I don't know how you could watch that kid play, and not think, like, that's one of the best college receivers I've ever seen. You know, I've talked to like NFL scouts about this through like the course of doing my own job. I mean, when people start talking about like this guy when he comes out, isn't like the Julio Jones, AJ Green category, which is like, you know, those aren't every year guys. Like that's a once in every few years, a guy like this comes along. Like I think Ja'Marr Chase was one guy that was like spoken about in that category. Well, look what he became. You know what I mean? Like, so when you start to hear people talk about a guy like that in that category, Jalen Hyatt's a nice player. You know what I mean? Like Jalen Hyatt's a really nice player. But if we're not basing this on statistics, if we're basing this on impact of the game and things that a guy opens up for everybody else, and I don't know how it wouldn't be Marvin Harrison. And I'd imagine this has got to be pretty frustrating for Hart too, after like the last couple of years of what he's had in his position room. You know what I mean? Like where, like last year he didn't even have a finalist. I mean, look at what Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave are doing in the pros right now. And then consider Jackson Smith and Jigba had better stats than those two last year. And you couldn't get one of those guys as a finalist for the Biletnikoff Awards. Like, they cancel each other out. And then you come back this year and it's like, okay, now we've got a guy who is like defined as the number one here. And you still don't. I mean, it's just, to me, it was like, I'd imagine it'd be really, really frustrating if you're Harlow.
From a media standpoint, do you feel like the challenge is the amount of talent? You know, when you looked at Garrett Wilson and Olave and JSN, Smith and Jigba, there was so much talent across the board. And you had CJ Stroud at quarterback. Do you think there's a punishment for
being too good?
I think that exists. Like, I honestly think, like, so, like, Caleb Williams absolutely deserves the Heisman. I would have voted for him,
right?
But without question, like, if you're looking at, and look, like I've taken this sort of stuff into account when I voted for awards too. Like, who means the most to their team is usually a pretty big factor, right? Like, so, like, Caleb Williams is going to be looked at a certain way because look at how many new people they have there, right?
Yeah.
The coach is new, the system's new. You've got, you know, Jordan Addison, Mario Williams, all these people coming in from different programs. The offensive line had turnover. Like, there's all this new stuff, and they were on the doorstep of the college football playoff. So, of course, you are and you should look behind the beyond the statistics, right? Like, you should. You should say, like, okay, like, the degree of difficulty here for Caleb Williams is damn high, and he cleared it. And so, like, he deserves a ton of credit. If you compare him to, like, you know, against, like, okay, like, Stetson Bennett, where it's like, they have five stars all over the place. They've got two guys at tight end that are probably both going to be first-round picks. They have a backfield full of NFL guys. And, oh, by the way, they've got a defense that makes it so a lot of weeks you don't need to score more than a couple touchdowns to win the game, right? So, like, that's always going to be a factor. But my argument with Marvin would be you lost two first-round picks, two high first-round picks who have already proven themselves at the NFL level. And then you lost a third guy on the fly who will also be a first round pick. So, like, there was the production at that position had been cleaned out almost altogether. And he came in, and not only was he a great player on his own, now, like, how much did he mean to Julian Fleming and Emeka Ebuka, right? Yeah. Like, how much did he mean to those guys? Because he's opening things up for them, mm-hmm. right? How much did he mean to you in the running game? Because you got to account for the guy running down the field. You know, I get what you're making, like that argument, like, is definitely a factor with this stuff, but I actually think, like, and you could have used it against those guys last year, right?
Right.
You'd be like, right. All right, well, like, this guy isn't seeing a lot of double coverage, or they aren't rolling things towards him quite as much just because there are three of them out there. Like, that argument should work for Marvin Harrison, yeah, exactly. I think, right?
Right.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so, yeah, because with the awards, obviously, you know, CJ was up for several, obviously, just 52 years in a row, he was up for several awards, obviously didn't win any. And now we're at a point now we're kind of heading to the playoffs. And once again, Ohio State was essentially snubbed. I mean, not snubbed, but we didn't win anything, right, for when it came to those awards. Do you think going into the playoffs and your experience with the Ohio State not having this type of success with the awards and not being recognized, it kind of propels them to kind of maybe do a little bit more when it comes to these.
I hope so. Were either you guys, I'm trying to remember, were either of you guys in the 14 team?
No, we're younger. So we
finished with Trestle. So yeah. Trestle last year was our senior year. Finished.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You guys never played for Urban. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Played for Urban.
Yeah. I was trying to do it in my head. I should have looked you guys up before. So that's my bad.
We're the homework.
Yeah. When you get to my age, everything kind of blends together.
Yeah, so we went to two national championships. When we was two freshmen, we played Florida in the national championship against Meyer, where we lost by a lot. Yeah. Then our second year, we played
LSU.
Yeah.
But I think that's sort of thing worked against you guys, again, in the Florida game. You know, like, Florida, I think, used it 100%. Like, and I would say in 14, like, there's no question. It's like, oh, they got a backup quarterback. They just snuck in. Like, you know, they don't have the horses to run with Alabama. Right. Well, you know, now we look at that team and it sounds like ridiculous that anybody would think that they didn't have the horses to run with anybody.
Mm-hmm. I was at that game too. Yeah.
And I sort of think that this is like this could be, I think a lot of it's going to come down to where the mindset of the team is and everything else. And you guys can speak to that better than I can, but, like, you know, I do think that there's enough out there that they don't belong, that they backed in, that Michigan kicked their ass, that some people thought it would be a good idea to plant a flag on a field and may have to pay for it sooner than they ever thought they'd have to pay for it.
Right.
Like, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, all that stuff's out there for them. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that, and I do think, like, if you look at it, there are some similarities to the 14 team in the sophomore class, because that sophomore class, you know, I don't need to go through the names with you guys, but, like, Bosa, Zeke, you know, Taylor Decker, I think, was a little older then, you know, like, that group. There was younger guys in that team that all kind of came together at once.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, they all grew up together at once. You know, it felt like all those guys sort of came of age at the exact same time. And so, you know, you look at the sophomores on this year's team and, you know, it's Marvin, it's JTT, it's Sawyer, it's, I mean, you know, Henderson, it's Ebuka, like, all these guys, like, I think the opportunity is there where it's like, these guys are, like, potentially elite players, yep. And a lot of people are telling them they don't belong,
right.
And they've got a real chance to show they belong. So I think that that's where maybe the motivation would be if they have the right mindset over the next 4 or 5 weeks getting ready.
Yeah, and you know, we see the talent. They have the talent. They can match up talent-wise. But what we saw in that Michigan game was talent not actually executing at in the way that they should, and, right. You know, took, what, 4 or 5? You could probably count 4 or 5 plays that really determined the entire game in that Michigan game. So, I mean, if you clean that stuff up, you give yourself an opportunity.
You know what's interesting about it, too? How many 4th and 5th and 6th year guys Michigan has? If you, like, look at their roster, like, I think one thing that an NFL guy brought up to me that was really interesting was he said, like, about that matchup, he said, you've got a lot of, like, 4th and 5th round picks, like NFL guys on Michigan's roster that are 4th and 5th and 6th year guys. So essentially what you have is a team that's, like, full of mid-round picks, but older mid-round picks, right? Mm-hmm. So you have guys that are, like, 2 or 3 years older and more mature, and then you have a bunch of first-round picks at Ohio State that are 19 or 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that that was, like, really an interesting way to look at it. And COVID plays into that, too, because a lot of guys got the extra year, too, you know? But, like, it's sort of interesting that way. Like, you look at Michigan's program, they've got a lot of guys who are, like, just below the elite level. They're really good players. that wound up hanging around as a result, you know? And so now it's like you've got an older team of like mid-round picks and a younger team of first-round picks. And, you know, hopefully we get to see him again and our guys do some growing up between now.
Yeah, right, right. A lot of old guys in general right now, because of the COVID year, Stetson Bennett is, what, 25?
Yeah,
this is born the same year as Lamar Jackson. Like,
oh, that's interesting. Is that right? Is that true?
Yeah. I think
he was born the same year as Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. I think they're both born in 96, I want to say. Yeah, I think 96. That's like the.
That's not.
So I did want to get your take on
Jackson. I should have stayed in college that long.
So Jackson Smith and Jigba not playing in the playoffs. Obviously, he dealt with the injury.
Yeah.
All year, essentially made the decision to kind of focus on what's coming next in the NFL. I just want to get you, what's your overall take on that decision, and really just in general. I know there's different than when we play. There was not much. We didn't like. I remember being hurt. I remember playing injured, and not thinking about the overall context of what I was doing. Right. I thought about it later when I got to NFL, and I was like, yeah, you know, this injury I played with for 2 years. I probably should have sat down for a few games. I probably should have addressed it. But I didn't have, when playing in college, I didn't have that level of, you know, context. I was really just trying to, you know, what do we have to do to win the next game? What do you think about the transition in college now with guys, you know, probably having a little bit more advisor or, you know, more agents or whatever, giving
more
them
people around them,
yeah, more people around them, just to figure out, you know, how do we make the decision, and you know, JSN specific decision, to really just to focus on the next, what's next.
Yeah, let's we'll talk about Jackson specifically in a second. I just think in general terms, right? Like this is the reality, like and like there's, because I mean officially they can't become their agents, but like let's call it what it is. Like the NIL like. Representatives a lot of times are NFL agents, and they're going to become the guy's NFL agents. And I can tell you, I can go through a list of guys now where I could tell you at the beginning of this season who their agent was going to be in the NFL. And it didn't work that way before. You know what I mean? Like, so like the fact that they can get to the kids earlier means in a lot of cases, the agent is going to be, his focus is going to be, what can I do to make sure that he gets to the NFL healthy and make sure that he gets to the NFL in the optimal position to perform at combine and pro day. And I think that that can work against a player sometimes too, because if a team sees a player handling things that way, they're going to have questions.
Yeah.
Like, okay, like, so now what's going to happen at the end of your contract, right? Are you going to start to play it safe at the end of your contract? Are you going to pull yourself out of stuff? Are you going to, am I going to be able to count on you later when that situation in college becomes an NFL situation?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. You know, I think we've started to see kids, and I think this is a good development. Kids have more information now, you know, and I just think like, if you look at it, like when Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette opted out, I think it was 2000 would have been, it'd been the end of the 16 season, 'cause they were in the 17 draft. When they opted out, like that was like, whoa,
right.
Look back at it and it's like, Christian McCaffrey was opting out of the Sun Bowl. It looks like such an easy decision to make. You know what I mean? Like the guy was the eighth pick in the draft, but both those guys were running backs and they were cognizant of like, I only have so many miles on my legs and it's only going to last so long. So I need to save the miles while I can. So that's a challenging balance, I think, for players, because they want to do what's best for their teammates. They also want to show their competitors to the NFL, but there's the real life business proposition of the whole thing, you know? And so I think that that part of it is a reality for everybody. Jackson, I mean, everything I've heard about the kid is A+, right? So like, it sounds like he's a great, great kid. And, you know, I know having talked to some of the coaches there, like they think the world of him. They think he's going to be a really good pro. I don't know if he's like as physically talented as Wilson and Olave. Now, I think Wilson and Olave would tell you maybe he's a better football player. I don't know that he's going to run as fast as those guys did. I don't know he's quite as explosive as those guys are. I think he probably finds a way to stay in the first round. But, you know, I do think like there's some questions football wise that he has to answer. And now I think he's also going to have to answer the question. Did you choose the combine over the playoff? I don't know that that's necessarily fair, Because from everything I've heard, like, that was a freakish hamstring injury, and they just couldn't get it right, and they tried and they tried and they tried, and there just came a point where it was like, I don't know, there's much more we can do just other than rest it.
Yeah. How much weight do you think the NFL teams put to that question? Because I mean, sometimes there's a question they ask, like, this one question that I always got do you hate to lose more than you love to win or something like
right,
that?
Right.
You know, and you just answer the question, oh, I hate to lose. Yeah. And then that's.
Okay. And then it's like, how the hell do I answer it?
Right.
It's definitely gets thrown in the bucket, you know, and makeup is such an important thing. You know, like how, like what's inside a guy? Troy Brown, I'm sure you guys are familiar with him, was a great receiver during Tom Brady's early days in New England. I did TV with Troy for a bunch of years. And Troy had this saying that I thought was really interesting. He said, money will only make you more of what you already are. And I thought that was such an interesting way to put it. It's like, if a guy is one way in college, giving him a big check isn't going to make him different. Isn't going to make him work harder. Isn't going to make, like, it's just not, you know, like 99 times out of 100, it won't. And so like makeup is such a big part of this for NFL teams, because they're looking at it, especially with the first round picks, saying we're going to hand this guy an opportunity to create financial security for himself and for his family for life. And we need to know how he's going to operate in that situation when he's not fighting for it anymore, you know? And so, like, I think with these kids now, like, you know, that's a huge part of the question. If you're going in the first round, it's, all right, like, we've turned this into a business for you now. How are you going to handle it? Are you going to push through an injury? If it's close, are you going to go? If there could be long-term damage done, are you going to go? And, you know, it's sort of the underbelly of the NFL, but it's a reality in that, like, the injury – rate in the NFL is like it is at any other level of football. It's 100%. Every team is going to have injuries every year. And like, I just think that that's something that these kids, like that's something that like is a reality for all of these kids. And it's going to be a reality for Jackson. You know, he's going to have to know how to answer that question. And again, like it's may not be fair to him, like on an individual basis, based on everything that he went through. And I know how frustrating the hamstring was for him this year.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a question he's going to have to be prepared to answer. And if you answer it the wrong way, you have to understand that it could, I don't think it's going to like cause a team not to take you, but if they have you ranked right there with another kid, it might be a tiebreaker. And in the reality is in the NFL draft, if it's a tiebreaker with another kid at your position, that could mean like 5, 10, 15 spots. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's real money that you're walking away from. So I think he very much has to be prepared to answer that question the right way.
And then I know one thing we also want to kind of dive in is, once again, we obviously Ohio State's quarterback, C.J. Stroud, he's been tremendous for Ohio State, put up a lot of yards. But once again, when it comes to the awards, he doesn't bring any of them home, basically off of, two losses in a couple of years. What is your thoughts on him when you think about ranking the quarterbacks that we – well, obviously haven't made a decision yet, but most likely we'll see in this draft.
Yeah, I think he's going. And I think he's in like sort of this group of four, I would say four quarterbacks that are like, I feel like this is one of those years where you're going to have to be comfortable with a guy's flaws and you're going to have to be comfortable with like the idea that the guy could work past them. So Bryce Young, I think by all accounts, like I think has the cleanest tape, right? Like, and like if he was 6'4", he'd probably be slam dunk number one overall pick. Yeah. He's not 6'4". Okay, you know what I mean? He's not 225 pounds. So with him, the question is going to be size. Will Levis from Kentucky had a great junior year, not as good a senior year. How much of it was the system he was playing in? He wasn't great at Penn State. So you're looking at like physical tools that he has. Like he's big, he's strong, he's got a big arm, but like you've only really seen it in one season, and it was with an offensive coordinator who is doing a lot of things to help him. So how much of that was smoke and mirrors, how much of it is actually indicative of his potential? Then Anthony Richardson's the one who's really raw and has a ways to go, but he shows traits. So it's like he's one of these cases where it's like you see everything you need to see. It just takes a lot of tape to get there.
Yeah.
So how – like can you turn who he is in flashes into who he is all the time? Mm-hmm. And then I think with CJ, the biggest question is going to be how much – like how much can he improve when things are jumbled around him and when things are a mess around him. And for better or worse, like, there's a little bit of that reputation of being a 7-on-7 quarterback. So, like, how does he react? Like, when the pocket's muddy and he has to move, how does he react? Can he keep his eyes downfield after he gets hit? How does he play after he gets hit? When there's 10 yards for him to take there in the running game, is he willing to tuck it and run? Like, so, like, those are the questions that CJ is going to have to answer. And again, like, all four of those guys have, I think, have relatively significant flaws. And I think for teams that are, you know, planning to take one in the top 10, top 15 picks, a lot of it's going to be based on whose flaws am I most comfortable with. And that's something that I think you really sort of have to suss out through the pre-draft process. And that's why those interviews and the combine stuff, all that stuff is so important, because you're trying to figure out who is going to be able to work through their flaws and who isn't. And by the way, CJ's got a great opportunity to answer some of those questions against a really, really good defense on New Year's Eve.
I'm going to be my question. I mean, it seems like there's a great opportunity, like you mentioned, going up against a Georgia defense that is really, really has really been impressive. And you talk about how does he respond when he gets hit. It's a good chance he's going to get hit against Georgia.
Yeah. I don't think they'll be able to keep Jalen Carter off completely.
With that guy, you usually get hit hard, right?
Yeah.
So to that point, college football prediction. And we know the four teams that are in it. And also, so one part of the prediction is the TCU versus Michigan. Who do you want to win that game? Right? Because there's always this thing. There's almost a split, right? Some never can root for Michigan or even consider the fact that they want them to win. And others say, you know, I want Michigan to win this game and then go match up against Ohio State so that we can, you know, knock them off their high horse. So what camp do you?
I sort of want them to win. The plus to them losing would be that we remain the only Big Ten team that's won in the college football playoff, which would be nice. I sort of want them to win, and I'm a little torn on it, because it would be kind of hilarious if we were in the national title game and they weren't. I think, like, the idea of seeing us versus them, we got a huge mountain to climb to even think about getting there, because Georgia's great. But it would be really cool to see Michigan, Ohio State at SoFi on whatever it is, January 9th. So I would say I begrudgingly, like, would be rooting for them there.
Yeah, I'm on that same, but I want the rematch. I think last episode, I'm one of the guys that I want Michigan to win every game. I want them on the highest horse possible when they play Ohio State and we knock them off. So what better way than the national championship game? We're both there and we take it to them. So.
And we've already determined if that happens and we beat them, I'm going to get a block O flag. All right, we're gonna drive to Ann Arbor. We're gonna find a good place to plant that flag. So if you're willing to take that trip,
yeah, if you want to ride, just
let me. I'll meet you in Ann Arbor. You guys want to meet me at the 50-yard line?
Yeah. And I'll just thank you. Appreciate.
Well, hey, wait a minute. How would you guys have reacted if they tried to do that to you?
See, I feel like we would have fought.
We would have fought,
right?
I mean, it was.
But I feel it's different. I know the guys there, they get a lot of heat for it. But it's like they didn't, like, win the game. And when teams came to the middle, came out with a flag. Like, once the guys that was actually playing was down, sinking Carmen, Ohio, halfway up the tunnel, this takes place. So we had an incident like this when we was in school. We lost to Illinois. That was our
sophomore year. Senior day. It was ranked number one. Juice Williams, Rashad Mendenhall, they had, you know, Monte Davis.
I remember that team.
Pretty
solid
team.
And they called themselves stumping on the block. So they go to the middle. You know how everybody comes to the middle. They call themselves stumping on the block O.
And Malcolm Jenkins probably was the first one to kind of just jump in the sea of Illinois. Yeah. And everybody, I mean, at that point, everybody had to follow.
Yeah, had to follow suit there. Now it's different now. They really didn't even make the news. That's what took place. And that's another coward move.
Take care of himself too. So, like, Malcolm's not the person you want to be.
Right, exactly. So, yes, I feel like it was like a coward move. I feel like they waited, and now that everybody's gone, oh, now we're doing this extra center. I just feel like the whole thing
was
extra.
I just thought it was interesting that the school that called the cops when somebody tried to fight them in the tunnel is planting flags.
Right, right. Yeah, that's kind of. But that's what type of program they run. That what type of crew they are, man.
So, Albert, again, thank you for your time, man. Yeah, really appreciate the interview. You're our first interviewee, right?
Yeah,
so,
all right. Well, I'm glad we got the technical stuff worked out. Yeah, I'm happy to come back on with you guys anytime. Hopefully, maybe we could do it ahead of the national championship game.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That would be fun. Yeah.
So we'll get your prediction. We'll also get your commitment on taking that trip to Ann Arbor with the flag.
Right.
I may or may not have snuck in that stadium before and taken something, so we can tell that story.
There we go.
So you know how to get in. Okay, perfect.
You got a map. Okay.
All right, man. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It.
That was great. Thanks, guys. A lot of fun. Hey, get my number from Eric. If you guys ever